The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Keep your text coming in to 51551 and your emails to ray@rte.ie. Mark O'Keefe wrote an open letter to his five-year-old son, Riley, who is autistic, and it has attracted a huge amount of attention. Riley is non-verbal, and having finished 2 years of preschool, he has been left with no school to go to in September. He needs additional support, and given the lack of available places in ASD units, his parents feel they have no other option than to go public and to try and get him into school this year. And Riley's parents, Mark and Amy, are here to tell us more. Good to see you, lads.
Thanks, Catherine.
And thanks a million for coming in. Mark, I know you from going in and out of Brown Sugar and the salon for years. And there I was at home reading, as I love to do, the papers on the Sunday, open them all up. There's you on the cover of Life magazine. And I said, look, there's Mark. And look, and I thought, this is going to be a great piece on dads and their sons. Riley is sitting up on your shoulders and he's just giving you the best cuddle. And I just thought this was going to be a gorgeous piece on dads and their sons. And then I opened it and I realised it was 3 pages, and it was a letter that you wrote to him out of love, out of desperation. It was a cry for help. Yes. And I was just, it was so emotional and so raw and all you. I was blown away by it. And I'm not surprised the reaction to the piece has been so huge. Tell me about why you decided to write about it and to go public. And was that difficult? And what's the reaction been like? Has it been difficult to try and take it all in?
Yes, I mean, excuse me. The original reason for writing was kind of twofold. First of all, it was motivated because we're sick of no one listening to us. Mm-hmm. We just feel that every time we knock on the door stays closed or falls on deaf ears. And the other side was watching Amy getting very upset by the whole thing. Has been a serious struggle for her over the last 2 years, and the emotion and the negativity around it has just taken its toll on her. And I just felt that I had enough of it all. So I sat down to pen and paper to write a letter, I beg your pardon, which I did do originally to the headmistress of my school that my children's goes to ask her if there's anything she could do to help to try and open an ASD unit in the school that she's in. And I hadn't heard back from her in a 2 week period, so I sat down and wrote this letter to Riley and sent it out to the press hoping it would get traction, and it certainly has.
Mm. And Amy, how has it been for you? We'll talk about Riley, but to go public with something like this when you want to protect your child and you want to protect your family, it must be quite
overwhelming. And you're kind of letting everybody into your private circle.
Yeah.
It's the only way we could really raise the topic so well, is that to make sure people were listening, was to do this, because every other option we went for, nobody was giving us any feedback. We weren't getting any emails, no phone calls, nothing back. So it was our last option, really. Mm.
Tell me about Riley.
Yeah.
Are you going to start choking up again? Right. So he's an incredible child. He's just about to turn 6. He'll be 6 in November. He's very outgoing. He's very adventurous. He's full of love. And life for him is one big playground.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't change a hair in his head except for possibly getting talking. But other than that, in our eyes, he's perfect.
Okay. And when was he diagnosed? Because you, reading the piece, you originally brought him to get his ears tested.
Yes.
He was doing great. He was flying along.
Yeah.
You know, and again, it's like when I've got Ellie, who's 16 months, and you know, you read these things and you start thinking, all of these milestones, and then something just happens one day.
Absolutely.
So what happened for you guys?
He just wasn't speaking. There was no little words. Mama and Dada hadn't come, and little things like that hadn't started to come. We were a little bit concerned, not overly concerned, just a little bit concerned. Someone suggested get his ears checked, which is what we did. And they kind of backed up that thought that perhaps there was fluid on his ear. We'd go in and get it drained and grommets, and that would be the end of it. But of course, as I mentioned in the story and in the letter, when they went in and looked, there was literally no fluid on the ear. And at that point, the doctor said to us, you need to go and get early intervention. You need a diagnosis. And we were like, what does this mean? We didn't know what it meant, you know, because we'd never come across it really. I mean, I'd heard of autism, obviously, through Keith Duff, and he made it so much awareness back in the day as well. But I wasn't really aware of what it was.
And I think so many of us are like that. Yeah. You know, we know we hear autism, but we don't actually, until maybe it happens in your family or people close to you, you don't. And it's such a wide spectrum as well, isn't it?
Like
it's so
huge. Yeah.
Yeah. So
every child is completely
different. Yeah. And it's so individual. Like every child is individual for autism.
Absolutely.
The spectrum is so wide. And I was really struck, Mark, by what you wrote that day when you were told in the hospital. You said, "I remember this aimless, helpless feeling I had walking out of the hospital as I was both literally and figuratively confused about where to go from there. I didn't know whether to go left or right or straight ahead."
Yeah.
So you were lost.
Absolutely, 100% lost. And whilst the journey has become a little bit more clear now through all the work that we've had to experience, I'll never forget walking out of the hospital for the first in my life, really feeling as if we were abandoned, that we were alone in the world. That's exactly how I felt. I felt that we were completely alone in the world.
Okay. You got him into preschool,
an amazing
Amy.
Preschool.
Yeah, tell me about that and what sort of help he got when he was there.
So he went to an amazing preschool in Donegal, Early Intervention Support Services School, and the girls obviously took him on. It's a very small knit class. They have obviously different strengths, all the different teachers. He had one-on-one tutor every day. So that was incredible because generally that wouldn't be a big thing. You wouldn't generally get that everywhere. It's so unheard of because of the lack of resources. So we were very lucky to get him in here. So he had a one-on-one tutor every day and he did that for 2 years. And he just felt.
Were you, as his mom, seeing every day the little changes?
Oh my God.
The improvements.
In 2 years was incredible.
Like what?
Incredible. Just interaction with other children, how to interact with us, just being around. Like, I can bring Riley everywhere with me. I've never experienced, and they've basically given us that they can, we can bring him out, interact with other children, other adults.
Because how does his autism affect him? Like, we talked about it being really individual. Yeah. So he's nonverbal. Yeah.
I suppose before he started in this preschool, he would have gotten frustrated very easily.
Okay.
Because if you bought him anywhere, how you bought menstruators or anything like that, he would.
It's all right, love. Take your time. Mark, he'd probably get, because I know you've said it, that he'd get frustrated and he could get quite sort of...
He kind of lives in his own little bubble, you know, his own little bubble of happiness, but he kind of expects everything done when he wants it done, how he wants it done.
Sounds like me.
His own agenda.
But you can't negotiate with him, do you know what I mean? And if you try, you kind of usually end up in a bit of a row, one-sided row from him. But what with the preschool that he's been, that's become a lot easier. He's starting to understand an awful lot more.
Okay.
And we've seen a huge step forward in that area.
And we know, I mean, even though I know probably not a whole lot about autism, all you hear about is early intervention, early intervention.
Absolutely. And when we found out about early intervention, we assumed that we got a diagnosis and we'd go in and get early intervention the day after. We assumed that's just what it was because everybody was telling us, no, you need to get them on a list and then you get assessment of need. And after that, then you're into the system and everything will be rosy. And that's what we thought was going to happen. And it really didn't. And that's when,
even for his preschool, were you funding that? Was that privately done?
Yeah, that was private. And we got a home tuition grant.
Okay.
And that's basically how the home tuition grant covered the school. And we were very lucky again that we could do that. And then the school obviously took him on and they gave him his early intervention like through ABA and other means. But they were they're so supportive of him. They were amazing.
Okay. So then he's, what age is he now?
He's six in November.
So you started looking like every other parent, trying to get into primary school. And that's when you realised the roadblocks that you were coming up against. So what options were you given?
So basically when Riley started in the early intervention preschool, the girls who worked there was basically giving you the heads up to tell you, like, you need to start now looking for primary schools for what they call ASD units. So that's what mothers do when you're in the preschool. We all started ringing around schools. We were given lists from SENO officers of schools and areas as far as Drogheda and Louth. With ASD units in it. So we start ringing these skills.
And with a child with autism, there's a cognitive test or something that before, say the school is that you're enrolling in September, you've got to do that in January?
In January, yes. Basically the application goes in the same as a typical child's application. All the applications go in January as normal.
Yeah.
But we obviously have to give reports and a cognitive assessment.
Okay.
And then obviously they only accept cognitive assessments from the HSE. And that's another battle because of the waiting lists. You have to turn the screw big time to get that. on time, because if you don't get in and it's February and the applications are closed down, the schools won't even answer your emails.
Right.
Yeah.
So you were put on a list.
Yeah.
And then you rang around. They gave you... the Department of Education, they gave you a list of suggested schools with ASD units.
Yes.
So you get on the blower and you're on the blower and you're on the blower and you're on the blower.
And they basically tell us, send in your application, send in your reports, everything that we think we need for an application to the school. January comes and then February obviously starts, and that's when all your refusal letters come in.
Okay.
So their refusal
and the refusal being because there's no space.
No space. Yeah. Yeah. So basically, I would have had to apply to schools with ASD units because mainstream won't accept him because he has a diagnosis. So we obviously apply to ASD units, and then what happens is once you apply, then your refusals come in.
Okay.
So you get your refusal letters.
And just so I'm clear, you know, in terms of the education options that are available for children with autism, you've got your preschool, obviously, then you've got special schools, primary schools, which are specific for autism-specific classes.
Yeah.
Then you can have an autism unit in a mainstream school. And then you've got a mainstream classes with an SNA.
So we were obviously told when we got our assessments and reports that Riley was mild to moderate on the spectrum, so he doesn't need to be in a special school. A special ASD school would generally free be for children that would have extra. So it would be like a learning difficulty, or they might have dyspraxia or something like that. So generally then if they don't have an extra challenge, they get moved on that they're suggested would be a mainstream with an ASD unit. And that's obviously what we were suggested to look for.
Okay, okay. So there's no ASD unit locally. How far did you look, Mark? I mean, you're living in...
There are ASD locally. There's one in Port
Marnock. We've got one in Port Marnock.
But none with availability. None with availability. Sorry, that's what I meant.
Yeah, with availability.
And how far were you willing to travel?
Well, I suppose that's a good question. I mean, at one stage there was talk about a school being available or a place being available in Drogheda. Now, I know they provide... transport, if you need transport. For example, Amy doesn't drive. But there's no way we were going to send our non-verbal child on a bus or a taxi for an hour and a half to get to school and an hour and a half back when he can't tell us what was going on in that space. So that wasn't an option. So from our point of view, we would like something local enough to where we are. We're in Port Marnock now, so in North County Dublin.
And you've got three children, Mark, who go to school locally, and the ideal for you and for your family unit would be for Riley
to
go to
the same school as his siblings. Absolutely. It's a brand new beautiful school. I've been asked not to mention it because they have the right to apply, but it's a fantastic school in the Balmain area, and a wonderful team of people working there. I have a great relationship, particularly with the headmistress. She's a fantastic woman, and because it's a brand new building, I believe that there's plenty of room. And as far as I know as well, Amy has an email to say that there's funding been made available for an ASD unit to be opened in this school.
Okay, well, when you went public with this and you've had a level of support, so tell me about the support that you've received.
It's incredible. It just really blew up for us on Sunday and Monday. We've had so many people obviously Instagramming us and Facebook and loads on social media and contacting us through the salons.
Adam Harris has been very supportive.
Yeah, oh my gosh,
with you as well.
He really is.
So he's the founder and the CEO of As I Am, which is the autism charity, and the brother of Simon Harris.
Yeah.
And they did a survey, which I was reading this morning, called Invisible Children.
Yeah.
So essentially, Mark, you tell us what that survey is, the Invisible Children survey.
Well, they surveyed 313 families, and they found that out of obviously 313 these families are all looking for places in school. But he actually believes that there's closer to 1,000 children across the country that are without school places this September.
Okay.
Now, I haven't had a chance to read the report, so I don't claim to be an expert in this field. I'm only an expert in Riley and on our situation.
Mm-hmm.
But he's done some fantastic work, incredible work for autism.
Okay. And what also struck me when I was reading the piece in the Sunday Indo was your access to various therapies from the HSE can't be accessed unless he is in education.
Yeah. We'll turn down the letter.
So basically, your early intervention is from when they're diagnosed, which is usually between 18 months to 3. And then they're in preschool, hopefully, if you get a preschool place for 2 years up till they're 5. Then it's school age. So once you get moved over to school age, which is your primary school, you're taken off early intervention teams and you're moved over to what they call the school age team. But when you're going onto the school age team, you have to have a school placement. So until you have a school placement, you're not put onto this list. So you're taken off previous lists. And now, right now at the moment, we're not even on the bottom of a list. We're not even applicable for yet until we get a school placed. And then we'll probably put down to the bottom of the list. This list is up to 6 years long.
Oh my God.
Before we get seen by a speech therapist, occupational therapist, some children need physiotherapy. Mm-hmm. So we haven't even started that list yet because we've no school place.
Okay. So what's the plan B?
There's no plan B. Well, you know, if Roddy doesn't get a school place in September, he's sitting at home for a year. He's going to be just left there to our devices, but he's just left there to waste away. But what's the really worrying thing for us is Riley's not going to press pause. He's going to go backwards. He's going to recess in all the skills that he's already learned in the last 2 years. He's going to forget about those and he's going to end up going backwards. So, you know, we're absolutely up the wall over this because we need to get him a place in the school.
And it's shocking to think that there's 313 children who have not got access to an education, which is a constitutional, it's a constitutional right.
Well, the figures are higher than that.
They're just the registered. Well, we asked for a statement from the Department of Education to before we came on, and we got a very, very lengthy statement, and I just took a summary of it, and I'll give you a read of what they said. While the department does not comment on individual cases, we are aware that some children with special educational difficulties are experiencing difficulty in getting a suitable placement for the new school year. Ensuring that every child has a suitable placement available to them from September is a key priority. Parents who may need advice or are experiencing difficulties in locating a school placement should continue to liaise with their local special education needs officer. Where parents have been refused enrolment in a school, there are established legal procedures in a place to appeal that decision under Section 29 of the Education Act 1998. The government is spending nearly €1 in every 5 of the education budget on special education, about €1.9 billion in 2019. We have significantly increased the availability of special placements for children with special education needs, which without doubt they have.
Mm. Yeah.
But that's no good for you if you can't get your child in locally.
You're trying to contact one of these special needs officers extremely hard as well.
Okay. Like,
we've been working with them, and when I say working with, we try and contact them. It's near impossible. You send an email, you might get a reply for up to 2-3 weeks. You phone calls, most of them, they leave their voicemails full, so you can't leave a message. So it's near to impossible to get a contact these officers. Mm. So you have to do it yourself. So you might get a contact off one of them, or they might send you an email of something just bare, an option, and that would be it. That would all you'd be hearing from them, and that's they think that they're helping. Mm. They're supposed to do a job of giving you places. They don't tell you where this place is available or how we can contact or anything like that. They're the ones that give us this list of up to 20 schools and tell us to contact them ourselves.
And the Minister has done some great work. I mean, I believe from speaking to Adam yesterday that they're currently making 80 places available in the Dublin 15
area
for children who need ASD units. So that's incredible for people in the Dublin 15 area. But there's a lot more places in Dublin that need this support. Mm-hmm. And the Minister has the power to make schools open ASD units, and he can make funding available.
Mm. Hi, Catherine. I'm a dad of a 12-year-old child with ASD. I'm listening to Riley, Amy and Mark's story. They are one of very many children in the same position. Year on year, this is a worsening problem. It's scandalous on so many levels. I'm crying my eyes out here. There is a huge another text message here. There's a huge shortage of properly trained teachers, even in an ASD unit. That's if you can get a place. That comes in from Philo. It's like my story. My son is autistic and struggles with verbal skills. He is never accepted by the other kids due to this, and it breaks my heart. Services are not good in this country. And that comes in from Stephen. I'd imagine, Amy, just on a day-to-day and a week-to-week basis, the frustration and the growing concern must never be out of your... And you've also... You're the mom of an 11-week-old baby.
Yeah.
Frank.
Congratulations, by the way. Like, it's great
Frankie's
news.
Coming everywhere with us.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. So he obviously... Yeah, so obviously while I was pregnant, and then obviously I got very sick towards the end of my pregnancy, out doing marches and the whole lot, so you can imagine.
You were protesting when you were 7 and 8 months pregnant.
Well, my anemia, but I actually had the mumps, and I was out protesting in the Latin the Rain and the Enough Was Enough protest outside the door that day, and I had to leave. I had to actually ring Mark and ask him to come and collect me, that I wasn't feeling great, and I ended up in hospital that evening with the mumps.
Mm.
So it's been very, very stressful. And then obviously as June was approaching, any mum that I would be friends with. I've got an amazing group of friends we work with from the school that we've been working with an amazing TD called Aidan O'Riordan. He's amazing and he's been really helping us. And as June was kind of coming quicker, we were all getting very worried.
Panicked,
you know,
yeah.
Because we all know school's closed and there's nobody there. So for the whole month of the summer, nobody's going to contact us. And when the schools reopen in August, they're hardly going to put us on the top of their list. Mm. Get contact then to make sure or see how we are. Nobody's going to ring us to see how we are or how we're getting on. Because I won't say, like, they're already busy. They don't care, do you know, that way.
Have you had support, Mark, from other parents and other families in the same boat as you guys?
That's the one thing I didn't really expect. I hadn't thought about that. The amount of people that has contacted us over the last few days through Instagram, Facebook, etc., and telling us their story. And of course, we've read every single message. We've replied to every single message. And they're all so similar, but yet so different for reasons that we've already touched on. And my God, it's been heart-wrenching. Like, you know, you read that story and you felt that way. Well, I felt that way by probably by 300-400, because every single story is everybody's touching. Mm. And we're very happy that we've been given this opportunity by wonderful people like yourself in the media to be able to be their voice and get this out there.
Mm. What would you like to happen now? I mean, I know what you'd like to happen. Yeah. I know you'd like Riley to be going to school in September with his brothers and sisters.
I'd like people who are in jobs of importance, who have these roles, to step up and do their job properly. I'm asking just to do one thing. They put themselves forward. They put themselves in these roles and they're going to be remembered for what they do here. And I'm asking them to just get involved and make ASD units and make places available for children who need the help. Mm. These are those vulnerable people in our society. We've done great things in this country for LGBTQ. We've done great things for women's rights and all these kind of things. And we've got to look after children. Mm. And these children need the most help of all. Mm. And that's what I'm asking them to do, is just step up and do their job.
Mm-hmm. I've been working closely with Amy and others for the last number of months on this issue. Amy has been treated disgracefully by the system, but has been a fantastic campaigner. A family with an autism diagnosis should be surrounded by care, not have to go to war for a school place. And that comes in from Senator Aidan O'Riordan. So he's been on your side by the sounds of it.
Yeah.
Listen, all I can do is wish you the best of luck.
Thank you so
you
much.
And the other 313 children, and as you say, Mark,
it's
I don't know,
more.
Possibly,
yeah.
Or more,
yeah.
Highly likely more. You don't think about a child not having an education, and that's what they have a right
people.
To. So, yeah. Listen, to Riley and to all of you, thanks a million for speaking out. Thank you for writing such a personal and heartfelt letter as well, Mark. And I know it wasn't easy for the two of you coming in today. So thanks a million. Back after
thank
this.
You. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.